So it's been a while, but welcome to another Crux of It, spin-off podcast for York Hospital Radio discussing all things York City. With the season now reaching that quarter mark and the FA Cup victory yesterday, what better time than to get together here on location at Haxby Sports Bar. So on our panel tonight, we have a person who loves things all York City, unless it's Peter Till, it's Mr. Ben Robinson. The second most used David on Radio York, it's Mr. Dave Hughes. If you need to fundraise a minibus, he is your man, it's Jim Calvoy. And of course, everyone's favourite line, it's Steve Ovenden. Welcome everyone. So I thought we'd start with yesterday's win at Rochdale. We were there, Steve, albeit in different stands. More on that later. What a strike by Newbie. Putting a marker down, do you think?
For me, definitely puts a marker down. I've seen a lot of the games this year and there's nobody that I feel frightened by. I think there will be four or five teams that are up there. Rochdale were top of the league. I've lost twice and people saying, oh, is it going to be them? Are they going to run away with it? I don't think so. I think there's four or five teams and put us in that mix. And I think it was a tight game yesterday, but we came out on top. And as I say, no one frightens me now. And the only people that can stop us being up there is ourselves. And I'm emboldened by what I've seen in recent weeks.
Good word, that. Well done.
The thesaurus out.
Yeah. Who do we want in the next round? I thought we'd go around each person, say who we...
Lowest ranked team at home for me. Just get through the second round, hopefully, and then play one of the big boys in the third.
Yeah.
Agree. I'm not for... some people saying like arrogant, somebody like that, but lowest ranked team, let's get through and see where we go with it this year.
It was me who said arrogant.
Yeah, I disagree with you.
All right. Why?
I just
they are a low ranked team in my eyes. time to put a marker down to them. Dave?
Lowest ranked team, yeah. Try and get the easiest draw we can and just get through and see who we get in the next round. Yeah.
Yeah, same. Simple answer. Keep it lowest ranked team.
I thought we'd have had an Oldham or a Luton thrown out there, but never mind. Where do we see York City at this stage of the season? We've obviously got into more detail as we go through, but I just thought a mark out of 10, a brief summary of what we think so far. We'll go reverse round then. So, Jim?
I think like a 7.5, really. They're sort of a bit above average because we're sat in the playoffs, so we can't moan too much, but we all thought it was going to be a bit better, right? And we've had flashes of brilliance, but it's just not managed to hold the consistency we need to challenge for where we all predicted.
Okay, Dave?
I'll go for an 8. I wasn't fully convinced we were going to go up without a fight. I know there was a lot of people who said we were going to be top champions. It was nailed on. The press were all over it. For me, being in the playoffs, like Jim said, is a good position to be in. It's a good point for us to mount that battle for automatic promotion, potentially, or else to have a strong position in the playoffs. But I'll also echo what Jim said, that we have had some slip-ups. Consistency has been lacking at times. And I think that it's very much a case of there are some very strong teams. And I don't think we predicted all of the teams that are now up there. For example, Scunthorpe would necessarily have come through fighting the way they have.
Yeah, I think we probably underestimated Forest Green as well, I would say
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
I was looking back at the predictions. Ben, you were saying Sutton were going to do really well, which has not obviously turned out to be the case. But yeah, it's that sort of league though, isn't it? Every year there are teams that maybe don't do well that you think would and vice versa. What say you?
I've got us at about 9. That might seem a little bit strange, but I have us at about 9.
On a scale of a 1 to 100?
No, I've got us about 8.5 to 9. And I say that on this basis. We were never going to get running away with it. We've had 6-7 people to bed in. Consistency's not been there. We've smashed Carlisle, but we've lost at home to Solihull and Scunthorpe. Scunthorpe are going to be up there. We just didn't really turn up that night. But I see that's two games that we've played where we haven't been great. And we're getting these players bedded in. I think our squad will come to the fore. I think we've got a good squad. And I just think we will be up there, as I mentioned it a few minutes ago, the 4 or 5 teams, our squad depth will take us there. So I don't change my position and say that we could be champions, but we'll be 1 of 4 or 5 teams in the mix.
I'll come to Ben in a second. Squad depth is really, really good discussion point, actually, because like I mentioned about being in a different stand. So I was in the Rochdale end yesterday for a long story, but but it was interesting being in with their supporters and listening to overhearing what they were sort of saying. And they, some of them were actually probably bitter really about getting beat, but weren't too disappointed with it because they knew that they would have a fixture backlog if they were, you know, went on a cup run, and they probably don't have the squad to do it. I mean, they've got, they think they've got quite a good side, but don't see themselves sustaining their start that they've done if they pick up a few injuries. So it's interesting that, isn't it, really? And I think some of the other Scunthorpe as well, I think they're one or two injuries away from dropping off, aren't they? Whereas we've got a massive squad, which again, I'll come on to in a bit. But Ben, what mark out of 10? I'm presuming you're not going for a 9.
No, I'm a bit more aligned with Jim and Dave on this occasion, the wisdom that have come out of their mouths. I think they've summed up perfectly where I think. 6 out of 10 I'd go so far. Significant room for improvement. I think we've been brilliant in some games, like Carlisle, battering them 5-0. But as Dave mentioned, consistency is key, and we are not being consistent at the moment. So for me, it's a solid 6 with room to improve.
Yeah, I would go 7.5. Whoever said 7.5. Yeah, I agree with that. I think the last couple of games, I think you're starting to see the consistency a little bit. We dominated the ball again yesterday, and at times it was a joy to watch, really, Steve, I thought, you know. Just couldn't get a ball off us, and same at Hartlepool last week. But I think it was better yesterday being against a better team. And again, because I was in with their supporters, seeing them banging that drum at the start and then it just getting quieter and quieter and quieter as the half went on was nice, really.
Yeah, look, we've gone there yesterday, and yeah, it's a cup game, but they're top of the league and we've really bossed it. We've gone to Forest Green. I thought we were the better team first half, despite going behind. They probably edged the second half, but we've had 3 or 4 chances second half ourselves. You know, we're against those teams that are going to be competing with us, we ain't doing too bad. That's why I get to 9.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I've always said that we need to be balanced on here. So whilst we've had the highs of yesterday and Carlisle, which was a brilliant performance, we've also had the disappointment of, like you said, Solihull, but also Scunthorpe. A game that I felt played out not too dissimilar to Oldham and Barnet. I felt like that kind of when the pressure's on us and when we get pushed back, and Rochdale did exactly the opposite of that yesterday, I thought. They just let us play our game, and much to their detriment, really, in the end. But Ben, do you still think, I felt last season there was a bit of a blueprint to beat us, and there was only a few teams that could actually do that. But do you think that's still the case? We've got a few different players, but I still think that is the way to beat us, just to be on top of us and not let us play out from the back and not let us do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's kind of what a lot of Notts County fans were saying about Maynard that we've seen so far. We'll have a lot of the ball, and in some games we'll be absolutely brilliant and score lots, but other games you'll have loads of chances or getting the balls into the right positions, but you won't score. He sort of looked at his record at Notts County of some fantastic wins, but some silly losses in there as well. And I think that's what we've seen with the likes of Solihull, with the likes of Scunthorpe. Just, you know, and even Hartlepool last Saturday, I felt that whilst we did really well, won, and it's always tricky to go there in those conditions and that pitch, I still felt we could have easily been 5 or 6 goals up if we actually got the ball into the right sort of channels and spaces. I think we allowed Hartlepool far too much time in the second half to sort of get back into it. You know, I think we could have blown them away. I think that's, you know, I agree with Dave, it's just consistency at the moment. If we sort that out, we'll easily win the league. But at the minute, it's not happening.
Do you agree with that, Jim? I feel like at times this season, we haven't quite had that swagger and that arrogance that we maybe had last season. You know, like when we're swatting teams away like 4 or 5 and, well, 7s even against Aldershot, but...
Yeah, I don't think we're bad. I'd rather we were creating chances than conceding chances, let's put it that way. And I view Hartlepool a bit differently. I thought we were, whilst we had more chances, we should have probably put a few more away. The part where we struggle is when teams push us really high, and I thought we did quite well with Hartlepool in terms of never really felt in too much huge danger. I know they had a couple of chances, but I never felt like we were ever struggling. And Fagan Walcott, I know we're going to talk about him later, but he just at the point that he stopped running forward is the point where we started the trouble. That's what both Scunthorpe and Solihull did really well. It's they just put so much pressure on our back line when we get the ball that we can never get out. But I don't think that's new. That's not new with Maynard. That was similar under Hinchelwood, and I don't know how to solve that. I don't know what the solution is there. If we stopped playing, well, the teams that do well against us are the ones that stop us playing, and I mean that very strictly in terms of they just stop us playing with the ball. But I feel more assured under Maynard. I feel more comfortable with. I don't feel like we're going to get an absolute pasting every so often. But
yeah, I agree with those comments really. But where do you think, Dave, if anywhere, we need to strengthen?
Interesting question. Howe has been sorely missed. I'm not going to suggest that we need another defender because I think we have got some quality in there when they're firing all cylinders. Con Clark coming here would have been lovely. He opened the scoring record at Carlisle yesterday. Ollie, he scored an unbelievable number of goals last season. It just hasn't quite clicked so far this season. We'll see what happens. So maybe another striker. That could be good. Another striker who maybe can play alongside Pierce or can slot in behind him a little bit easier than Stones. I'm still not convinced about that as a partnership. I still don't think they can play together, personally.
Just to play devil's advocate, I've mentioned this before. When did he ever get a chance to play in a partnership? It's very difficult to serve a cart player together when you just never see it. I mean, the only time I can really recall it this season was Truro away, when Ollie slotted one through for Josh to score, but we've not really ever seen it again since. Yeah. A lot of times it's him coming on, or maybe for the last 5 minutes of games, and I think they were on the pitch together when Josh scored against Carlisle the other week as well. So it's not that they don't score when they're on the pitch. Yeah. What do you think, Ben? Do you think another striker maybe needed?
No, I can see both of your points quite well. I don't think we have had the chance for them to both sort of gel together and play together. But when they have played together, it hasn't worked yet. I think my issue with Stones is just the amount of bookings are silly and unnecessary. He just comes on and whacks someone, don't he? You know, he's not doing himself any favours. But then you get the brilliance like against Carlisle where he doesn't stop running and that brashness has helped him get a goal. I think, you know, Stones needs a run of games to sort of prove himself, and we're not, because Ollie Pearce has been so brilliant, he's not had the opportunity to do that yet still.
That might come. That might come, you know, especially if we get a cup run as well, you know, in however that might happen. I think having reflected on Steve talking about squad depth, it could well be that we need Josh to step up as a talisman striker a little bit more often.
Do you think with the bookings thing, and I see that a lot, I see people get frustrated with him, but I felt the booking against Carlisle was completely unjust. I don't think it was a booking, but I wonder whether his reputation is now starting to go a little bit before him, that refs are sort of seeing him and just sort of, do you know what I mean?
Maybe, but don't you think with Carlisle, like, why was he even in that position?
I think he's trying really, when he's coming on, because he's not getting a lot of minutes, he's desperate. And I've, you know, we've spoken to him, Steve, before. He's desperate to be the number one striker, really. He's desperate to have a great career at York City. And I think when you're only getting 10 minutes here and there, he is quite a fiery, I think he's a little bit like a lower league Wayne Rooney, really. You're never going to take that part out of his game, ever. No, and if you do, he's just not going to be the same player.
I think like the point is you can't get five bookings. Like, you need to be aware of that. And I think if you look at this, like, to point out that Carlisle one, I mean, that game was won, right? They weren't going anywhere. You've still got to have a little bit of kind of that sense in the back of your mind to say, right, I've got 10 minutes here. The reality is I've got 10 minutes to score a goal. Like, that's what I want to do. That's what you should be wanting to do. I think squad depth wise, though, I think we're still in a fortunate position of not needing anyone. I just think it's whether someone comes in that improves stuff or provides us an option that matches up a style. Yeah. I think this deal with we play like this almost two tens roles right now in stuff. When they swap them around, we play quite differently. So if we're playing Banks in there rather than like Ollie and Greg Ollie and Newbie, for example, we play differently. So it's just, I think the only thing you'd be looking at is whether you bring people in to match a style that's more successful or you know, a bit like we talked about over the summer, is that you're bringing in effectively a League One player that you know you're going to have here and then as you move up.
I mean, David, it's interesting you mentioned about Con Clark, and I've seen quite a few York fans really play down Con Clark this week, but thinking, well, if he had signed you'd have been absolutely all over this. You know, he is a very, very good player, isn't he? I think he got 24 goals the last time he was at this level, player of the season. He's a top quality player, but I'm not quite sure where he would have fit in for us. No. And I think he would have had to compromise. And also with Carlisle, I'm not surprised he scored two yesterday, but having seen Carlisle a few weeks ago, I'm not quite sure he's really what they need. From what I could see, they needed someone to play in defence who weren't making schoolboy errors.
If they're going to build a team around him, which I would imagine they might well go back to the drawing board a little bit and try and, you know, build from him back, it could work. I mean, for me, it's a case of it's that having that the element of competition and having the element of hunger. And obviously, Josh has clearly got passion and he's got hunger. It's going to be a long season. It is a long season. The very nature of it is we have long winters. It's going to be tough underfoot. There's going to be a lot of games where there's injuries. We were very lucky last season with Pierce, for example, that he stayed fit the majority of the season, if not all of it. And again, that paid dividends, and the goal number he scored was incredible. But for me, it could be controversial, but if he gets injured and if Josh doesn't perform, and I don't think Mo Fadera is the answer, you know, as enthusiastic as he is, he's raw, he's young, but I think there needs to be maybe a discussion down the line about bringing in another striker as well, if needed.
Yeah, we might come back to that later on in this podcast, really, about the extra striker. Steve, I just wanted to touch on some of the players. We talked about squad depth there. The likes of A&G, Marvin Armstrong, can't get into the squad. I think both are back in training. But then Batty and Fallowfield both start yesterday, and Paddy was on the bench last week. So it sort of shows if you work hard, you will get your chance under Stuart Maynard. But do you think we are going to see Armstrong and A&G again in a York shirt?
I'm not so sure we are at all. We like them both. We love them both. The injection of energy that Marv gives us, A&G the same. But for me, I was over the moon to see Dan Batty back, fringes of it, then on the bench. And then yesterday, I've got to agree with what the manager said, having been there and witnessed it. He's controlled that game for that period of time that he was on the pitch. Was it 70, 80 minutes? When you're bringing Hunty on to replace Dan Batty, I thought Batty was marvellous yesterday. So I was over the moon to hear Stuart Maynard say that he'd done a good job. So I think we've got just a plethora of people in midfield who will do a job. I mean, Hunt, the goals he's got, he's just marvellous. You know where we're at with that. You've got Banks in there.
Well, we ain't got Banks in there, have we? I mean, that shows the strength of it.
That's what I mean.
And that's what I was thinking yesterday when he was coming on. I was thinking, guys, someone had said to me a couple of months ago when we signed him that 2 months down the line he would be on the bench and you can't really see him getting in anytime soon. And he's a top quality player at this level.
Yeah. And we've got Newby and we've got Joe Gray. It's just a great squad. It's going to be getting the pieces to that jigsaw right each week. And I guess that's why the manager's saying, at a game at the weekend, is who's done the most in training. That will be what I will decide, and a game plan. So I think our squad is more than good enough. We're going to come on to individuals in due course. But yeah.
Were you going to make a point there, Jim?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the difficulty that we've got with A&G and Armstrong is I think it's just a fondness, right? I mean, we wouldn't have set up without Armstrong coming in the year that he did. But practically, when you bring players in at this level, you know, 90% of the players that clubs bring in at this level, you're bringing them in to go straight into your first team. With us this summer, we were bringing players in to improve on a year where we got 96 points. So midfield, it was always going to happen across the pitch. And I think with Armstrong, who would you take out? You've brought in a League One midfielder who is, I think he's wonderful. You've
Haram.
I think Haram's absolutely incredible, and he comes down from League One. Hunt's turned out to be arguably one of, if not the best midfielders in the league. Well, who do you take out? Both of them play completely different into Armstrong anyway. So,
and which is why I wasn't disappointed that Con Clark didn't sign, because where would you'd have to take one of them out. And if you take Hiram out, for example, the balance of the side is completely different. you're way too attacking. You can't take Hunt out in the form that he's in, and you've just given him a long contract. So
he won't be the last player that fans are fortunate enough have a fondness of that just stops getting games time. If the Ucklers get what they want and the club goes in the direction they want, we're going to have to get used to seeing that, unfortunately, because they're going to be players where, you know, he is incredible squad depth. Mm. He's not going to get anywhere near the first team now.
Good problem to have. Yeah. So we all picked us to win the league, I think, at the start of the season. I think, Ben, you were the most hesitant. Are you still thinking we're going to be champions? Or
no, I don't think. I think we'll fall just short.
And well, the second question to that, Ben, is who do you think, out of the challenges we've faced so far, who do you think are going to be?
Sutton. I'll stick with that one. No, I think...
A hell of a comeback.
We are in the... like Steve said earlier, we're going to be in that four or five teams that are wanting to challenge for the league. But I think we need to sort out that consistency. I think Steve's absolutely right when he says we've got brilliant players, but they're just not quite... It's nearly there. We're just not quite fitting in the piece of the jigsaw almost correctly yet. And they really are a great team who can win this league. But they need to sort out that consistency. You know, we can't be having games such as Scunthorpe and Solihull and even Braintree to some extent. You know, I know we won that, but it could have very easily, you know, slipped up there. But I think, yeah, I think it'll be between Forest Green, us, Rochdale, Carlisle, Scunthorpe, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that with the amount of new players as well, it does take time to gel, doesn't it? And I just think yesterday was a good game for us to sort of have a bit of a barometer before this podcast. But I also think that, you know, maybe that consistency is starting to come now. And, you know, obviously the manager's come in as well. That's a bit of upheaval, isn't it? And, you know, maybe the second half of the season is where it all clicks into gear and you do get that consistency.
Saying the other day that I think a team that goes on and really good winning run, it's sort of like January, February time, will be the team that goes and wins the league this year. I think it's going to be a case of which team can get that consistency and just go on a 12-game unbeaten streak or what have you.
And I think the next kind of, what is it, 4 weeks until we get those extra games played as well for us, that'll really set us up for that. If we have a niffy next 4 weeks where those games that we've got in hand and we're all sat here going, off, we win, you know, how many times have we done the maths in our WhatsApp group around, if we win those two games in hand, we'll be back next to Rochdale, whatever it is. If we have a niffy period whilst we're clearing that up, well, January becomes, it's going to be all out on January pressure for us. But if we come through that well and then go on a bit of a run, I think you could do. But you're going to be in that group.
Just the thought of you and your WhatsApp group. You said doing the maths there. But two games and it's 6 points, Jim.
It's rock and just roll. It's rock and roll.
Help you out.
But it's the maths
out
of that. And then, but Rochdale are playing them. And you're playing them and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, because we're bored on a Sunday. So.
Yeah, fair enough. Next, I wanted to pick out some superb individual performances. I mean, Malachi Fagan-Walcott. Have to start with him. I mean, I have a very strict all-time 11, of which it's very difficult to break into the squad for me. But he's definitely knocking on the door. I mean, what a player. Rolls Royce. Jim, anything else to add?
I think he's wonderful. I think he's been superb. We were watching him at Hartlepool, and a few of those times where we thought Hartlepool were going to break and he just tidied it up. I thought he was superb. I think he's on track to be player of the season this year. I think he's got a really good strength that, especially whilst, you know, Ollie's not been scoring and Joe doesn't seem quite the same thing. I think in terms of popularity and all that goes into that, he's got a really good shout for it.
He was marvellous yesterday with that, in that exact same thing. You're thinking they're breaking through and they've got a yard on him, and all of a sudden those long legs get into gear and he's a yard ahead of whoever's trying to get the ball. He was marvellous yesterday.
He's so good. There is a worry about January for me because he is that good.
Yeah.
And I think it would take, you know, I don't think Matt will want to let him go. I think it would take a bank breaking offer to surprise him away, especially in the middle of the season. But that is how good he is getting. Like, there is points where it's like, well, absolutely no concern about him, you know. And that was and again, you go back to that thing with Matt. That was what they pitched us at the beginning. We're gonna bring players in young and sell them on. Now, I think January would be a stretch. It would have to be astronomical for them to let go in the middle of the season. But you're only going to have the same conversation in summer because he is that good.
Yeah, but, you know, for once we've got an ownership group now that aren't looking to, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, it would take a lot. Like, previously, it would always be like, geez, we're going to have to sell it. You know what I mean? There's just no way that person couldn't move on. You know, like Brody back in the day, you just knew as soon as someone bid X amount of money that he was going to be, well, he was going to be forced to move on almost, you know, that you kind of need that money in. But
the other thing is, when we've gone out and we've done Hunty, Joe and Ollie and put a market down and said, we're giving these extended contracts, it kind of tells you that they're not for sale. And we know that Mal's on a long-term contract. I get what you're saying, Jim, but I just think they're saying this is us protecting.
Well, don't get me wrong. I don't think they're going to want to. I don't think anybody's going to want to let him go. But say someone bid £1 million from League One. I mean that.
No, it comes down to the player, doesn't it? As well, I think
that's what, to what, get what? Stuff.
Yeah,
but you know that's that. All of a sudden, that's that. That'd be, and we're not all. You know, you haven't all gone. Oh. No, there's no way anyone's going to bid £1 million from League One. If that money gets put on the table, Matt might not get a choice. Juliana would enjoy £1 million, I reckon.
Maybe the fact we're in the non-league might help us for a little bit longer. Yeah. I think if he's doing that in the Football League, because there's still, I still think there's an element of risk to Football League teams if it's someone from the non-league.
Absolutely. I mean, look at, you know, we all, in the summer, we were thinking, oh, Pierce is going to go, you know, after his brilliant season. And I think it just goes to show that there is definitely some truth in what you said there, that he is proven in non-league. He made the step up from National League South to professional full-time football. But as you say, there is still people and teams who see a massive jump from the National League to League Two. Now, personally, I see the National League as League Three, but that's a different conversation. But yeah. I think it could give us a bit of a... bit of a blanket there.
But you know, we said about the Hartlepool game last week about how good he was. I mean, their best player was that winger, I thought. Is it Francis? Yeah. And at the start, he was looking, you know, but he was looking really, really dangerous. But then he sort of got ground down by how difficult it was to get past Fagan Walker. And in the end, just sort of like almost like had his arms up as if to sort of say, well, I'm just not going to get past him. And it was incredible. Because that's the difference, isn't it, between 3 points. Because if he's not playing there... that winger would have got to the byline a few times and created more chances, and you know you end up with a different result.
What was even more impressive about Hartlepool, and we've seen flashes of it in the past, but it was really impressive, was positionally he'd come on a lot. Like, he used to be able to, you used to, especially last season, he'd be a little bit out of position. A player like that had got a yard on him, and he'd just make that yard up, and that wasn't a problem. This year, that yard never existed because he was in the right place every single time. And that's a huge difference.
Yeah. Another player I wanted to mention was Mark Kitchen. I think leadership, consistency, and he just gets you 30 yards further up the pitch. I think he's just that left back that we've been crying out for years and years, really. He's just such a good player. I think everyone's rating him. To say he's underrated is unfair, but he maybe doesn't get all the plaudits that some of the players do. But Steve, I know you're a big fan as well, aren't you?
He, for me, is the best of the players that have come in the summer. And I say that with Noobs getting 2 yesterday and posing that threat. Joe Gray's been turning it on from time to time. For me, Kitchen is simply the best that we've brought in. We, as a family, been watching him quite a bit. And I think it really struck home away at Forest Green. We were in those seats on top, and we were practically looking down onto the pitch, and his distribution, talking his teammates through positional play. He told Ben Brooks to calm down and not be rushing. He was just fantastic, and it's not the first time I've seen that from Kitchen. Yesterday, I don't know, it was second half, he's gone from one side of the pitch to the other, but gets back into position. So comfortable on the ball, so positionally aware, such strength that for me he's been just outstanding. And yet obviously we're looking, as you say, at these other players, and you know, we're looking at Mal having a great season, but for me, that of those that we've brought in, he is head and shoulders the best, and that's with the start that we thought Banks was going to have. And I'd say Ash Palmer's been fine as well, growing into the role. But yeah, for me, Kitch just fantastic. Should be the skipper.
Dave,
yeah, well done that. Great. Yeah. I think Steve's extolled the virtues of Kitchen very, very well. He's quality signing, just what we need. His leadership, as you know, Steve said, he's got those leadership qualities. I mean, for me, Callum Howe, skipper all day long, but you know, in his stead, if need be, I think he'd make a good, you know, a good captain on the pitch. But he is, yeah, he's an absolutely cracking player. We've done, you know, and he's clearly fit into the plans that Maynard has, but he also seems to fit into the squad of players and people really well. And you can see that he is gelling with the rest of the team, and they respect him, he respects them. And, you know, I'm sure he won't get as many minutes on Ben Brooks's next vlog. You know, he tells him to calm down anymore. But, you know, he's absolute quality signing. And, you know, long may he stay here and carry on performing like he is.
Yeah, it's interesting you two mentioned Callum Howe. Don't get me wrong, I rate Callum Howe, and I think he is the leader of the team. But we've done pretty well without him. I think Ash Palmer actually is, apart from a kind of shaky first 5 or 10 minutes at Forest Green, I actually think he's done pretty well.
I think Palmer's done all right. But I think for me, it's a bias that's not really been born this season, I think Fagan Walcott is as good as he has been because he's had Callum Howe next to him for a season and a half. If you look at last season, Callum Howe guided Fagan Walcott through some games, and I think that's made Fagan Walcott a better player. So I think you know, I don't think that's so much with Kitchen. He's come back and he's very experienced, but that's why I like Callum Howe. The way he talks through games, you don't get many centre backs that talk through games like that anymore. And we've seen that right from when he came in. The way he talks, that defence through games is great. That's why I mentioned him.
He also seems to have a good relationship with Harrison Mayle as well. And there's the command that they both have between them. There seems to really settle that back line. And then obviously it has a domino effect on the rest of the squad as well. He's just a physical presence in the middle, and you know, yeah.
By the way, I'm not saying replace Callum Howe as skipper with Kitch. As gushing as I am about Kitch, you all around this table know what a warrior I think Cal Howe is.
You better not do. We were all stood behind you and your family at Hartlepool when your wife was desperate for Callum Howe to come for the next
year. Yeah. The guy is an absolute warrior. Great at his job. And get exactly what you're saying about people talking. Smithy used to talk people through games. Paul Stancliffe used to talk people. When we've had good people in the spine, that's what they do. And so now the problem's going to be, well, it's not a problem, it's when I'm extolling the virtues of this massive squad. We've now got Ash Palmer settled in, we've got Mal, and we've got Callum to come back. So that squad of ours starts to look even better. Yeah. We can... two of the three to make it work.
But
Kitch is the best we've brought. Just say it again.
It's incredible that we're this far through the season with all the players that we brought in, with all the excitement that we had up top last year, and the players that we're all calling out are two centre-halves.
one person who perhaps hasn't met the very, very high standards last season has been Ollie Pearce. I know 7 goals, that sounds mad to say it, but it still feels like if he was to hit a purple patch like he did sort of last season, we'd be absolutely home and hose, wouldn't we? But he's still getting chances. But in hindsight, Ben, do you think we maybe should have kept one of Dippo or Lenny? Just, I know we had this discussion earlier, but I don't know whether that competition maybe is healthy, having the three strikers. At the minute, they're both, Stones and Piers are both guaranteed to play minutes, aren't they, every match. Whereas I think, you know, you look at Lenny, he's still continued to do a great job for Boston, still got quite a few goals, I think, this season. Dippo, I think, has scored a few for Derry as well. Do you think, in hindsight, we should have kept one of them?
No, I'd love to have kept Lionel John Lewis just for his experience. And like when he was down here for Paddy McLaughlin's testimonial event, the way he spoke, you couldn't believe like how many people were just thanking him for doing his job, essentially. He was such a leader, but there was always going to be a time over the next sort of couple of years when he was going to go. He could absolutely still do a job for us. But I think Pearce, he always starts off slow, doesn't he? Doesn't quite maybe get as many goals as he could do, and then he just suddenly starts firing away. He does seem to look more frustrated this season. There seems to be a lot more sort of hands being thrown up in the air.
Pretty sure he did that last season, to be fair.
But yeah,
I know what you mean. You maybe notice it more this season.
Like the balls aren't coming to him where he wants it all the time, and it seems like if another player takes a shot, he gets frustrated. But he's still the striker that, if you know, he had a chance, you put a lot of money on him to put it away. You know, I think teams are clamping down on him a bit. They know how good he is, so they are sort of targeting him out of the game. But he's got to work away and find how to score. I think it's a tough one because we haven't seen enough of Stones to kind of go, do we need another backup to Stones or backup to Pearce and gives a different option. Dippo gave us some sort of unpredictability. You know, he's a player who could just pick something out of nowhere. But I think it was time he moved on. I think he moved on at a good time. So it's a case of with Pearce, he just needs to start firing in goals.
Yeah, I mean, he missed two gilt edge chances yesterday, didn't he, Steve? But last season, I think he would have just snapped up. And I don't know, again, whether that's just keep him making a good save or whether it's just one of those things at the minute, but it just doesn't seem to quite be clicking. But at the same time, you do feel like once he gets one, he's going to...
Listen, he's a confidence player. He's a cheeky chappy. He's buzzing about. And if one of those goes in yesterday, we're all saying exactly the same thing. That run can very easily start again. Last year, that ball went through and you knew that 9 times out of 10 it was going to end up in the net. I think some of the balls haven't been played to him as much this year, and I think you're right.
I'd say that before yesterday, but yesterday he had two really good chances
for
him.
But what I'm saying is, since the start of the season, those balls haven't been played through, and yesterday he gets that run through, and the keeper does make a good save, but I'm expecting that to be going in yesterday, and it didn't. But, you know, you don't just fall off overnight, so I don't doubt that he will be back and will get 20 plus goals this year.
Well, that's it. I mean, he's got
7.
Yeah, yeah. And so, he's missed 2 penalties, so he could have had 9, couldn't he? He don't mean he missed any penalties last season.
He's almost like, I suppose, sometimes in your own jobs, sometimes when you lose a bit of confidence, you try too hard. We've said the same thing about Stonesy, haven't we? He almost needed one to go in off his arse or off his shoulder or shin or whatever. And
I wonder what you want to say there.
But he just needed one. Yeah. And he'd be almost be saying calm down, and I just wonder whether Ollie needs to just calm down and just be as cool as he was last year. And
but he's obviously seen as a leader as well, isn't he? Because Maynard's given him the armband, so he obviously sees him as a leader in the dressing room.
I just don't know. Ridiculous.
I think that penalty at Hartlepool summed it up when you say he's trying too hard. He's almost just tried to hit it into the roof of the net. Yeah. And it just went sky high. And you could tell he's probably gutted about that. But you're absolutely right. He's just almost trying that little bit too hard. And he's a fantastic striker. And I think if he does get that one soon, they'll start to flow again.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't doubt that for a minute.
I think the only thing, you going back to those at that arm in the air, is I remember, it's going back a while now, it's going back to the Yeovil game, but the start of the problem is that he does that, and if he just got himself back on side, the reality of the players we've got behind him now is, there was one particular one where he'd thrown his hands up in the air with Banks on the ball, that would have been a really hard ball for Banks to play, and he'd done a full 360, sent the Yeovil guy for a taxi, and then we had a really easy ball to play through for Pearce, but he was still offside, throwing his arms in the air. And it's just that, actually, get back on side, because the likelihood is that they're going to turn that round and be able to play that ball to you.
Yeah. But like I say, you know, we're talking like we're winning the games in hand, we're there or thereabouts, aren't we? And this is without our kind of talisman getting as many from open play as he did last season, but I'm sure he'll come good. Just sort of wanted to bring it on to thoughts about Stuart Maynard. Obviously, the last podcast we did was just after Hinch had left. What's people's thoughts on Maynard so far? If we could maybe go around, Ben, start with you.
Good. Room for improvement still, but good. I'm happy, relatively happy with how he's going. I won't be eating that humble pie just yet, as some people say I need to be doing. But I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it isn't his squad, necessarily. But he's got to do the best he can with this squad. If he irons out the inconsistencies, I think, you know, we'll no doubt win the league. But it's sort of like a bit too much like his time at Notts County, I'm seeing at the minute. Fantastic wins over Carlisle and Tamworth and Yeovil. But then that's then backed up by poor performances against Scunthorpe and Solihull. Iron those out, and you know, I'll be one very happy York fan. But for now, you know, room for improvement.
Yeah, and Steve, like, you know, he has got the best squad in the league, in my opinion. You know, like, he hasn't been able to bring his own players in, but he shouldn't have to, really. That squad has got a lot of depth, hasn't it? Like we've sort of said, a lot of quality. But it is quite difficult to take over from someone like Inch. He was immensely popular with the supporter base, wasn't he? And kind of, I felt like the margin for error was very, very small for Stuart Maynard. But he got off to a great start. And even when we've had the wobble, you know, to beat Carlisle 5-0, that was as good as performance at the L&E, I think, as we've seen since we moved to the stadium.
Yeah, I was worried for him that he was on an absolute hiding to nothing.
Yeah.
Absolute hiding to nothing. But, so he's gone in, he's assessed what players we've got. I don't hide behind the fact that Gary Elphick stayed. And, you know, we're getting comments out of Stuart Maynard about how helpful Gary is. So I think Gary is probably assisted in terms of who's good, who's not. Tactically seems quite good on free kicks and plays. So I think I'm delighted that he has stayed. It's going to clearly take time to see what you've got and pick a side for a particular game. And I touched it back at the start. I've always been a big fan of Dan Batty. And it's maybe taken a while for him to get back into the side. I think it was quite clear over summer that Batty wasn't going to be used by Adam and was down a pecking order. So Stuart Maynard's seen what he's seen in training, and Dan's back in the side. And as I say, he was marvellous yesterday. So I think it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. And I think, but I'm buoyed by what I'm seeing. I'm obviously disappointed when we lost those two games we're talking about, but I'm...
But you're not going to win every week, are you? Like, that's the thing. And you're working with non-league footballers as well. Like, they are going to have inconsistent... Mm. You know, they're all going to be inconsistent to some extent.
We didn't win every week last year. We won't win every week this year. But I'm, broadly speaking, buoyed by what I'm seeing. And I'm really, really hopeful that it's
going to... He seems to have quite a lot of passion as well, Dave. I see at the end of each game, you know, when we've won, he's coming over to the fans and he and punching the air. Because not every manager's like that, and I think like, with Hinch... The fans really took to him, but I feel like they are taking to Stuart as well, you know, already singing his name and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even some of the chants have had the names changed. Some of them haven't quite yet. There's still the odd Hinchwood coming in now and again. But yeah, he's absolutely, you know, caught the hearts of many of the fans. Like Ben, I'm not going to eat humble pie just yet. Maybe we can share the same pie at some point down the line. But I am still... The judgment is still out a little bit, you know. I have taken off the lace veil and all black in mourning of Hinch, but I am now. I am now. You know, I'm behind him. I think he's doing a good job. There is room for improvement. Of course, there is. I mean, we wouldn't be fans if we didn't demand the absolute best, and we just went, yeah, it's fine, you know. But he has come in, and as Steve has said, and I didn't think about the Gary Elphick angle, to be honest, that Gary obviously is still there, has helped with continuity, steadied the ship, knows the players, knows the temperaments, and knows how they work together or don't work together. And obviously, any kind of things that worked well in training, they can carry over into Stuart's reign. So that's good. And I think that he, when he's showing that passion, it does show the fans that he cares. And it means that I think we take to him a little bit more, that we can see the passion, the enthusiasm, that it means something to him. Because that's, as York fans, that's all we want. We want the manager to be there, to love the club, to really want the players to play for the club. Because if he wants that, then they will, you know, they'll hopefully run through brick walls for him.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I've been a little bit disappointed with some sections of the fan base that when we do lose an odd game, like we did to Solihull or Scunthorpe, it's like straight away people are like, oh, we wouldn't have lost that under Hinch. And it's sort of like, I sort of get that, and you can sort of have those comparisons and stuff, but judge Maynard at the end of the season. I mean, like, that ultimately, that's how he'll be judged, won't he?
Yeah.
We need to get promoted, like, ideally as champions, but if we went up through the playoffs That's fine. It's we need to be in the Football League. Yeah. And I think that's the only real time that you can judge him. Until then, I think everyone just needs to get behind him. We will lose odd games here and there.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, if we lost three or four in a row, then that's a different conversation. Yeah. But I don't feel like any of us feel like that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, I think if you look at where we've come from, I think the thing that... I don't want to go back and sort of dwell on Hinshelwood's time too much, but if you look at where we were at the end of the 23-24 season, when we were, you know, almost going back down into regional football, horrendous thought. And then obviously we get that ridiculous run, we get that unbelievable points tally. It took a lot out of people when he went.
Mm.
And that's the thing. And I think that it has now taken a few games. I think the Carlisle game, especially for me, helped massively amongst the people that I know. I mean, I'm not on board with the whole kind of, oh, Adam would have won that. I can't be thinking about that. There's too much else going on. But I get where they're coming from. You know, there obviously are times when you look at performances and you think, well, maybe under Adam, he might have sorted that out a little bit earlier. We might have tweaked that. The subs might have been made earlier or whatever. But, you know, I mean...
But also, go on.
Also under Hinshelwood. We might have lost those games, but we wouldn't have been beating Carlisle.
Absolutely. You know, and we would have conceded. You know, that's the other thing.
So. I think the point I'm trying to make as well is that I think some people have that written ready to go. when we do get beat, like, right, I'm going to post that. So, you know, because it happens so quickly and I just don't think it's helpful.
There was always quite a lot of vitriol when like Hinshelwood, especially was the second half last season, if we lost, there was quite a lot of angry. Just the only difference there, Dan, is they didn't have anyone good to compare him to beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, the challenge with this manager change is that you've got someone who people liked. Yeah. They weren't exactly going to be going, oh, God, I don't know.
Hardly.
I wish Hardly had. I wish Hardly had come in and won that game.
Sam Collins.
Yeah. It's like
no one said that.
They didn't have that.
Not even Sam Collins. Like but people were saying that about Hinch when we lost 6-1 at Altrincham, saying Hardly wouldn't have lost that 6-1. That's how it works, isn't it? Speaking of Hinch, just been reappointed worthy manager. Jim, I wonder what your thoughts were on that. I'm presuming it's a lot of it is. You know, he could see Son Jack play quite a lot, doesn't he?
I'm
surprised, though.
There was a combo, right? I was surprised that he dropped down. But then when you go through it, he goes to see Jack play a lot of Brighton. Jack's just had a kid. So the idea that they wanted to live it up north for much longer was probably doubted. I think it will have hurt him. I think, let's be honest, I think he'll have been pretty emotional when he left here. He's gone somewhere. We saw a few Worthing fans a few Worthing fans mentioned on the forums and stuff that he's gone back to a club that he knows. He's gone back to a bunch of people that he knows, he trusts, he likes, that like him, that they know how they all work. So I think it's probably quite a comfortable fit. I think in terms of in those things, and I think it's got to suit his life. Like I say, he's got a son that's flying high, and that, you know, he's injured at the minute, but he's been playing for Brighton in the Premier League. He's been playing for England in the under-21s. We know he went out to the under-21s in the summer. He's got to want to be close to that. Got to be want to be close to that young family as well. So I think it suits. With a son playing in the Premier League, I don't imagine money comes into it much.
That, I mean, I'm surprised that when Carlisle got beat off us 5-0, that they just didn't part ways with Mark Hughes and go for Hinch. Like, I think he's really the best manager. At that stage, he's the best manager who's not employed by anyone knows that league. I mean, if he'd got them Carlisle playing the football we were playing last season, their crowds would be absolutely astronomical. They're a massive club.
I was shocked when we were back to Worthing. Yeah. You know, I genuinely was shocked. And the main reason is that when he moved up to York, I thought he was looking to progress his career. Now, with all due respect to Worthing, that's not progressing his career going back. And there will have been people interested, I'm sure, because his stock was high.
He said he had offers, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said he had offers.
So, unless they were, you know, Billericay Town or, you know...
Worthington FC.
Exactly, yeah. It's going to be different. Now, obviously, personal reasons do come into it. And obviously, at the end of the day, family is number one for most people. But I also think that there's probably jobs in the south of England or nearer to his family, if that's the reasons that he could have taken, that were higher up the pyramid or on an equal level.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think that's the bit you've got to tie in. Where else does he go down south?
Well, I think
that, 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 that,
could have gone, you know.
He's better than like that. Yeah,
but I just not wanted that. Who knows?
Maybe, but you know. Anyway, look, good on him. I think Worthing are a nice club. He's a nice guy. I think he'll forever be remembered for as much of giving us a connection to the squad and all of the great things that he did off the field. You know, thanks very much and all the best.
Ben, just last one on him. I wonder when his head hits the pillow, though, he thinks about turning down that contract that was offered to him, because I think we can all assume that that's where the beginning of the end happened for him at York City. Do you know what I mean? Like, when, no disrespect to Worthing, and that, but it is a step back, isn't it, really?
Yeah, 100%, especially when you hear that Hinchelwood bought a house in York over the summer and things like that. You think that what's happening with Hinchelwood is, it is a backward step. I thought York was then going to see him career go up the ladder, but it does seem to have taken a backward step. As Jim says, I don't think money's an issue for him and his family, but he's obviously picked what's right for him, and I think you are right, he probably will sort of have a few regrets over how it ended at York, and I think he will hopefully remember his time fondly here, as I will, but I think, you know, it's just the way it all ended on a bit of a sour note, really, rather than getting to go out on his own terms.
Definitely. And obviously we wish him well, and all the best in the future.
Yeah, you can do, yeah.
So, yeah, just so as we're coming towards the close, trust update, Jim?
I have got a trust update. We've got the AGM on Thursday. Tickets will still be available by the time this goes out, I would think. However, you may have missed the deadline to be a member to attend the AGM, because that is 5 o'clock on Monday 13th.
That's tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, for the membership, but you can get tickets right up to on the night on Thursday. We are still looking into contracts with LNER and working on running the buses more efficiently with Pullman. So bear with us on that. But I think we'll probably do a test train ticket event this season. Other than that, renewals are up. So for a lot of yearly members, it is on a rolling membership now. So whenever you joined up, will be your renewal date. But a lot of people will renew this month. So make sure you check your emails. We've got a nice, lovely new membership system, which makes it dead easy and all automatic. And you can even sign up so it will just renew each year automatically. Steve is typing on his phone, so he can just do that one as well.
Just to say, we don't have a social in November because of a fixture against Gateshead and Paddy's dinner the night thereafter. So we will be back first Wednesday in December. Don't know who those guests will be, but we are trying to get some exciting guests for that one, which will be kind of a Christmassy.
Yeah, I think Andy Leaning and Janine and possibly are on that one.
Yeah, in terms of
as
current
ambassadors. Yeah, but current players, yeah.
Current players, just TVC. Don't know. It'd be fabulous if we could get Kitch along, wouldn't it? That'd be just marvellous.
Yeah,
but we're
in Kitchen.
But well, we'll have a restraining order in place.
We're speaking from experience with Peter Till. I thought we'd another thing that we normally do, Room 102. We didn't do it the last couple of episodes, but things that we like to moan, that we're Yorkshiremen at heart. As York City fans, I think it's natural for us to want to have a moan. I want to start us off and see if you can beat mine. Mine is the sound system in hospitality, I think, is terrible. So this, obviously, as many people know, I've stepped down from commentating this season. So I thought I'd treat myself, not just see
the
ticket.
Is this the sound system I set up every week?
Oh, sorry, Dave. Shit, I didn't realise.
Are you on about the one with the wireless?
Well, yeah, I'm on a. So yeah, so yeah, I treat myself to hospitality, which I think is just a room, basically. That. But obviously, there's some really good guests, but you can never ever hear them, and I don't know whether that's people talking over them or whether it's just that there's only two speakers at the front. But yeah, Ricky Sprager the other week, great guy. Couldn't hear what he was saying.
For those tech fans out there, we use short SM58 microphones, which you have to speak right up to, and the information is passed on every time that you need to put your lips on the microphones, and that genuinely is a thing. And so if you bring your face away from the microphone even 2 inches, the sound just dissipates straight away. There have been some issues with the in-house system as well,
I mean, I was doing this as a manager. I was going to get a right of response. Sorry, Dave.
I really should have checked this out earlier. The audio community, you know, I feel, yeah. The system in there is absolute. It isn't great. And it's, you know, when you put a multi-million pound stadium together, you thought, wow, you know, maybe we can have this room, especially as people are paying money to hire it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's just a minor thing, really, like I say, but.
Doesn't sound like it.
But, well, I'm playing it down now, Dave's here. But, yeah, it's just, obviously, some of those players and people that are coming to speak, like, I think, was it Derek Bell who came as part of the sort of Man United? I literally couldn't hear a word. But, again, now you've explained that, he was too short for the mic. So that's why, obviously, we couldn't hear him. But, yeah, it's just some really good guests and you can't hear him, so it's just a little bit disappointing. Ben, obviously... Must be something better than mine, then. Dave's played it down.
For me, it's got to be the speakers in the fan zone. I think if I was to put one thing in,
it'd
be
too loud.
The replays for the FA Cup for me. I don't like the way that this round, if we drew against Rochdale, we'd be playing on Tuesday night. But in the next round, if we have a draw, we won't have to play a replay. It's just done on the day. The inconsistencies of the replays in the ECB, all replays on at all for me.
They should be York City related, one or two, Ben.
I mean,
but yeah,
it's
go
close
on.
Enough to it impacts us. So, yeah, for me, that's what I'd be putting in room 102.
Particularly when you have the, I don't even know the name of that competition that they're playing, that they play all the under 21s and no one goes to, what's that called?
What was the.
Where they take three players off after a minute.
The National League Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, no interest in that whatsoever. And I don't even think these clubs do that are playing in it.
The fact that Leeds United under 21s won it last year and no one cares sums up that tournament. But
they beat your Sutton boys in the final, actually. Yeah, I didn't know about that. So. Yeah. Steve.
This is a bit of a moan about York City unofficial social media. I just wish there could be a complete blackout for 12 to 16 hours after every match, because we've got supporters who are going, aren't we bloody marvellous, we've just had a great victory here, or God, I'm going to top myself, I need the Samaritans. It's just ridiculous. Some of the comments that come out that are hugely personal, that are in the moments after a game, you just think, guys and girls, just sleep on it, wake up following morning, compose your thoughts, because it doesn't do anybody any good being ultra high. It's not going to affect the next game, and being absolute manic depressive has no bearing. It just gets lots of people chipping away at each other on social media. I just don't.
But I think every club's like that, aren't they? I mean, like, you look at the reaction. I mean, I didn't really feel that in the stands yesterday. Like I say, I was in the Rochdale end, but coming out, they were quite philosophical about it. But then when you went on social media, they were an absolute meltdown, some of them. And I was thinking, you've just won at Forest Green the previous week. And they won at Carlisle a couple of weeks before that. They're having a great season. Do you know what I mean? Like, they again, like us, can't win every week. It's all these clubs have got.
Maybe I just need to throw my phone in a bin.
Yeah, maybe you need to 12 to 16 hours not go on.
Just don't go on and don't read it, because it just winds me. Even the positivity winds me up.
Yeah, you know, so some people, yeah.
It's extremist.
There are certain areas of social media on certain social media platforms that are worse than others as well, it's fair to say, without going into specifics. I think Steve has got a point, but I don't think a blanket ban of all the social media accounts, but I do think, yeah.
It's a good job he's stepping down, isn't it? Because he's just insulted half the fan base.
No, listen, it's a game of opinions, but come on, people.
Don't have
just
any.
Calm down.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and you know, it's sport at the end of the day, isn't it? Like, it's important to all of us, but there are some things that are a little bit more. Dave?
For me, it's got to be fans that criticise the sound system at the stadium, and the level at the fan zone, for your information, Ben, is recently been reviewed and is now being monitored by a decibel meter. So there we go. Any of you listening as well who've complained about the volume in the fan zone, rest assured that it falls within health and safety legislation. No, at my...
What a podcast.
Yeah.
This is a fun little tidbit at the end of the episode, isn't it?
My bugbear, it's always going to be the drinks prices. And that's a very kind of, you know, throwaway one. But for a lot of people who go to football, we go in there, we socialise, we meet people in the fan zone, and times are hard, costs are going up.
Yeah.
But the margin on beer is huge. I've been to a few Premier League games recently, and the cost hasn't been as high at those games, like Brentford pre-season, and a pint of lager was not what it is at the LNR. So, yeah, for me, it's the beer prices. And they seem to have taken off that pre-match discount that they had for half an hour when the turnstiles open. So, you know, it doesn't have to be beer. It could be a soft drink. It could be whatever your typical choice is. But I think if we're trying to attract more people, I know it's not the club's
And that's issue, a key point, to be fair, isn't it? Isn't the club.
Yeah. But it's something that is dictated by the caterers. But it's something that I think hopefully we can address at some point. And we have, as I say, we have had the discount in there, which was kind of an early bird thing when you came in the stadium, and it knocked a few pence off a pint, which people seem to like when it works.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the analytics of this episode, because it tells you exactly when, like, how long people listen for, just when the decibel meter comes in, whether there's a big drop off. Jim, last one, room 102. What's going in?
So I would say salty fan bases that come after us for no reason really and just keep going after us. I just don't care about all them. I just don't care. And I saw someone was having issues the other day with Carlisle fans, not your a different club. And I was just like, yeah, why is it in non-league that none of these are rivalries? We haven't got a rivalry with all them. It doesn't exist. Why is everybody in each other's mentions every time something happens? And if that fucking llama from Luton is still going on as well, I thought he can do one. It's been, you know, 13 years since that happened. So, yeah, I just don't get it. I can't be asked.
Until we get them in the FA Cup draw tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
What I will say on that, though, is there are a couple of York fans who do the opposite. When Oldham get beat, are on there. And it's like that for me is probably more galling than the other way around. It's like, they won that match and got promoted. Like, fair, we have literally not... Yeah, fair and square. Yeah. Like, move on. It's a bit like the Luton thing. Yeah. Like, move on. It's just not important anymore.
But that whole, let's create a rivalry. Why do we need that? We don't need that. There's plenty of that. You get 90 minutes on a Saturday where you can go each other for all out. But we don't need a rivalry.
I think it's the same. I think it's the same with the Hartlepool thing, you know, the weekend. I mean, it was actually, in a... Certainly from what I've seen, it was a fairly... You know, uneventful.
But I think Hartlepool, between the sets of fans, is a prime example of how it should be. I don't think there's any animosity from the fans outside of that 90 minutes.
No, but he's built up. It can be built up on social media that is a thing.
That's what I mean. I'm not sure it is. I think the fan bases are incredibly passionate for that 90 minutes. But outside of that, very rare that I see Hartlepool and York fans. But like quite a few of our York fans went in the supporters bar, they go in the bar. Mm. The sports bar at Hartlepool Stadium has been up for us. That's fun. So I think that's how it should be. We should absolutely be rivals.
I've got an Oldham season ticket as well, you know, just keeping the harmony going.
Well, you got one at Brentford.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like almost classed as like a social media rivalry. I just don't.
I feel like with Hartlepool, though, and less so with Oldham, because they're obviously in the Premier League when it started, as they all kicked on us. But Hartlepool are almost like a similar club to us in terms of like similar size fan base, been in a football league a long time, fallen on hard times. I almost feel like we can empathise with the other team, do you know what I mean, much? So I personally, that's why I don't have any animosity towards them. Dave, I think I'm going to put your prices into room 102. I think that was the most compelling argument. I'm going to finish off with you, Dave. Mm-hmm. It's your turn for Mastermind this week. So I'm going to ask Ben to time a minute on his phone, if that's all right. So, name?
Dave Hughes.
Occupation?
Drummer to the stars, and occasionally weddings, but mostly weddings.
Yeah.
Well, you're a teacher.
I teach at drums as well. Yeah, yeah. Bit of all things.
Specialist subject?
York City goalkeepers.
Yep.
Yeah.
You don't sound very optimistic there.
I'm not that optimistic, no.
Okay, well, it's been a weekend. Your time starts now. Question one. York City have played Wembley six times. Which goalkeeper has played the most in those six appearances?
Michael Ingham.
Correct. Which goalkeeper famously kept 11 clean sheets in a row during a 73-74 season?
Crawford.
Correct. Question three. Which goalkeeper started his career at the club under Billy McEwen and returned as a player and head of recruitment 17 years later?
Pass.
Question four. Which goalkeeper, aged 43, played three games at the end of the 2011-12 season and kept three clean sheets?
Oh, Jesus.
Come on, Jesus.
2011-12.
Question five. Which? How many clean sheets did Golden Gloves winner Harrison Mayle keep last season? 18, 19 or 20?
19.
Correct. And then, I'll start, so I'll finish. Who was the last goalkeeper to win the Billy Fenton Clubman of the Year award?
Ingham.
Incorrect. Pete Jameson.
Pete Jameson. There we go.
Which was the one that you passed on? Oh, yes, I'm sure people know the answer to this one. Who returned as player and head of recruitment?
Stockdale.
David Stockdale, yes.
Yeah.
And then the other one was on the bench at the weekend. Mm. The other one that he passed on was at the bench at the weekend, wasn't it?
I thought it was Paul Musselwhite, the one he passed
on.
He
was on the bench at the weekend. Not as in an assistant manager role.
Oh, right.
I was going to say, not
yeah, he was like, yeah. Should have given him a hero's welcome.
Yeah.
Best clean sheet record we've ever had.
So there's other questions we didn't get to, which I'll throw up in here. So which goalkeeper who signed in 1988 had previously also been a professional cricket player for Derbyshire? Anyone know that?
You're the only one old enough. That's why we're all looking at you, Steve.
No.
Chris Marples?
Yes.
2011, two outfield players went in goal against Luton Town. Can you name either player?
Chris Smith, Greg Young.
Correct. Which former youth team goalkeeper took a goal kick for Man United, which guaranteed a friendly against York City as part of a deal?
Nick Culkin.
Correct. What's the surname of Bobby and son Josh, who kept goal for York City?
Mims.
And then which goalkeeper had the chant "He's a baby" in reference to Matt Lucas's character on the TV programme Shooting Stars? Well before your time. Clark. His surname, I forgot to look up his first name. It didn't matter because Dave only got about five questions through. So let's see how many you got right there, Dave. And so one, two, three. Second place to Jim.
There we go.
Okay, so thanks for listening. The last episode we did was the sort of most downloaded we've ever had. So thanks as ever to everyone's support. This is for York Hospital Radio. So if you enjoyed the podcast, please consider donating. It's justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio. We'll be back again 6 or 7 weeks, do we reckon? For another little chin wag. So, yeah, look forward to reconvening with everyone and doing it again.
Happy Christmas.